Hello, everyone, and welcome to Let's Talk Parks. My name is Becky Dunlap.
And this is Marissa Moravic, and we're your hosts for this weekly podcast.
An evolving resource to help parks and recreation professionals raise the bar in their organizations so that they can make a positive difference in their communities. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Let's Talk Parks. My name is Becky Dunlap, and I am so excited that you have decided to join us for this episode. Today, I get to introduce you to our first ever sponsor of the show. So thank you so much to Productive Parks, who is a maintenance management software specifically designed for parks and recreation agencies. You know, on this show, we have had over 80 episodes, 80 conversations with people who are raising the bar in the field. And I only want to bring in, you know, people on the show who are bringing value and that can help you in your day-to-day work. So it's very fitting that Productive Parks come on the show to talk about how they've created a solution that can help you better maintain your parks, better communicate with your employees who are working out in the parks, and then also to maintain and take inventory of your assets. And so that's exactly what we're talking about today. Productive Parks is really changing the game when it comes to keeping track of all of your different maintenance and asset management needs. So if you've ever wondered if you need an asset management plan or if you should start to keep up with your maintenance in your parks in a more consolidated and organized way, then I think you're really going to love this episode. And even if that's not on your radar quite yet, I definitely remind you to just keep in mind how things can change so rapidly. And if you're not thinking about it today, then you probably will next year or the following year. And so it's just good to keep in mind how things are changing and how things are evolving and how you can keep up with trends in the field. So thank you again to Productive Parks for sponsoring this episode. And if you'd like to learn more, you can go to productiveparks.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Let's Talk Parks. I am thrilled to be joined by Mike Smith today from Productive Parks. Thank you for joining me today.
Oh, thank you, Becky, for having me on the show. This is great. I'm really excited.
Thanks. So, Mike, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, my name's Mike Smith, and I'm the co-founder of Productive Parks Software. I started out running an IT department in the Chicago area at a park district, and then worked as a systems analyst at several agencies in the Chicagoland area. And through that, I saw this need for a company like this, and that's what led to Productive Parks.
Awesome. So I want to actually jump in this interview by talking about an article that you guys actually have on your website about the original paper trail and how people used to keep up with maintenance and all of the different, you know, policies and procedures that we have in our agencies. And I found it fascinating. And I think it's interesting to think back to a time before computers. So let's actually just like start the conversation thinking about how agencies in the past were able to manage their maintenance through their parks and facilities. And from your perspective, how have things changed over the years?
Well, it's interesting. There's a couple, you know, in the oldest pre-computer era, you know, not just pre-internet, but pre-computers, there was a couple of ways that people handled it. One, there was just somebody that was in charge of maintenance and they stored all this in their mind and they just remembered it. And maybe they would jot some notes on paper, but they by and large stored everything in their mind and, you know, doled out the work to their staff based on what they had in their own memory. That usually only worked for small to maybe mid-size agencies. Larger agencies would use paper and they would write out a maintenance plan on paper and then just try to follow it by, you know, keeping track of their paper, have like things that we need to do in January, then February, and they would design out their plan that way. And then along comes computers pre-internet, and people switched a lot of that to spreadsheets. And so they would build spreadsheets to kind of track this, but that quickly gets unwieldy because you get so much data in a spreadsheet, it's hard to manipulate. So that was kind of the second phase. And then the third phase is along comes the internet, and there's applications now to that you manage it. But early on, the biggest problem was if it was somebody that had it all in their head, if they retire or if they leave and move to a different agency, all of that knowledge base just goes away. And so that was a huge problem. And then spreadsheets bring their own problems in just because it gets out of, gets difficult to manage. That's
Oh, well, exactly. I've dealt with a lot of spreadsheets, and at first it seems like it's going to work, but when it comes to managing maintenance across agencies where you like have to collaborate with different people that work in different departments, like it just gets so messy so fast. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad we live in a new generation, in a new era now. So tell us, in your opinion, what is and is not working about the traditional system of maintenance and reporting?
Okay, well, the people who used paper, their problem is that it's just hard to use paper to add up and get any data. You'd have to take it and read it and write it onto some other piece of paper or put it into a spreadsheet or whatever you might do. And so that's so cumbersome that I think most people didn't utilize it. The other problem is a piece of paper is one piece of paper that sits in one physical space. And so somebody out in the field can't see it, or somebody who works in a different building can't see that piece of paper with the information on it at the same time. So that was the big problem with that. And so the moving to spreadsheets helped that a little bit, but even a spreadsheet sits in one place on the network. And so you get problems with multiple people wanting to edit it. And out in the field, it's still very difficult to get like some kind of VPN access or something back to the main office to edit a spreadsheet. So it was very cumbersome. And therefore, a lot of people either didn't use it or really kind of struggled with it.
Yeah. So clearly, you know, kind of how our field works, which is pretty unique, I think. Mm-hmm. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and kind of how you came up with Productive Parks and, you know, why you created it to solve these problems?
Okay, well, I started out running an IT department in the Chicago area of a Parks and Rec operation, a park district. And so while I was doing that, I got to know how the whole Parks and Rec world works, how municipal government works and the budgeting and all of those aspects of it. But I also, because you're in IT, you work with all the different departments kind of equally. And so I would be talking with the maintenance people and they would always have, you know, we're looking for some kind of software that we can use, but we just can't find anything that fits need that we could actually afford. They were finding things that were these very sophisticated CMMS applications that were incredibly expensive, you know, it's equal to or more expensive than the program registration software that the agencies use for, you know, registering and renting facilities, etc. And so that was a problem right there. And then the other problem was that they were super complicated. And so you almost needed a systems analyst to come on board and help them manage this really complex CMMS system. And again, that just drew up the price even further. Or they would find these very, very simple little work order programs that didn't really fit in with what it didn't cover, barely a, you know, a third of what they wanted to accomplish with the system. And so after hearing this from multiple different agencies, because after I left that position running the IT department and came kind of like an ad hoc systems analyst and worked with various agencies, helping them in their area of IT. And I heard that same complaint from maintenance departments in different agencies. And that's what gave me the idea that, wait, there's like this missing piece of software here that these people could really use. And so that was the genesis for building Productive Parks, was that I just saw the need because these people came to me and were hoping that I knew of something, searched, and I couldn't find anything either that covered what they needed but didn't cost a fortune. Mm-hmm.
I love how you have firsthand experience with this and like really created something specific to Parks and Recreation, because I think you're right. People kind of look for different solutions, but they're so different. They're for different industries and they just don't really fit what we do. And so I love that. So the other thing that Productive Parks also does beyond maintenance and reporting is actually asset management. So let's just like switch gears real quick and talk about that. And kind of let's go to the basics, because I think this is something that a lot of people may overlook, or they may think they have on their to-do list one day. Like, let's talk about what is an asset management plan.
Okay. Well, asset management is kind of a combination of things that you then roll out over a longer time horizon, because the asset management component has to deal with the replacement of that asset, whatever it might be. And in some cases, that can be decades of time. And so it's all tied together, because if you're managing an asset, you certainly want to be able to track all of the work that was done upon that asset. And you want to look at the history of inspections that were done upon that asset to see its condition at given points in time. So, and those are all components of the more traditional like maintenance management application, where you're just doing your daily, weekly, monthly events, or even your annual plan. And the asset management adds on this long-term component. So all of those more short-term components feed into it. So when you look at that asset, you see the history of all this information, but you also see its expected lifespan, and you can track its depreciation and some of these things that are more of a long-term horizon kind of aspects. And so we want one of our big things in Productive Parks is to make sure that everything is integrated. We don't like have an asset management module and an inspection module and a work order module. Everything is all completely integrated, so that when you're managing your assets, you also have access to all of your inspections. When you see a problem on an inspection, it generates a work order that feeds into the work order system, and it tracks the history of that work order, so that when you look at the inspection, you say, oh, so-and-so found this problem on this date, that it was assigned out to Bill to take care of, Bill took care of it the following day, et cetera. So all these things all fit together. And obviously the asset management, this all ties into it, because for example, you have a vehicle that's two vehicles, one's 7 years old and one's 8 years old. And so at 8 years is when you've decided you wanted to replace this vehicle. That's what you put in for its replacement timeline. And, but you look at it and it's been just a dream. It's been very little beyond basic maintenance done for those 8 years, where there's one that's newer. It's only 7 years old, but it was a lemon and you spent a fortune maintaining this and replacing things on it. And so that can help you to make a decision to, hey, let's change our timeline. Let's get rid of the one that's, you know, newer, but has performed poorly. And let's hang on to this other one for another year because it's performing beautifully. And so you can use your asset management like that. But if it's not totally completely tied in to all of your other components of the software, you won't have the data that allows you to make those kinds of decisions that can effectively help you to save money.
Yeah. So that's interesting when you talk about integration. So I think people, listeners might be thinking, what should it integrate with? So can you kind of talk about some of the other data pieces that, that Productive Parks or any maintenance system should integrate with?
Well, there's kind of two ways to look at that question. One is just internally that all the components within the software itself integrate with each other, like inspections with work orders, with labor tracking, with, you know, long-term asset management, all those pieces, you know, with inventory, all those things all intertwine and affect each other and can be reported on together. But then there's another aspect of integration, which has to do with integrating with software outside of the management system. And so we have gone to great lengths to create integration with most of the major packages that are out there for registration and facility booking. And so now people inside of Productive Parks can look at their schedule that they're pulling out of RecTrac or ActiveNet or SmartRec or RecDesk or any of those packages. And they can look and see, hey, what's going on at this facility today? So they can schedule their time to go make their visit to that location. And so we have that kind of thing at a basic level with just about all of the major packages out there. And then we also have some more sophisticated integration with Amelia's SmartRec. And they have worked with us. And so now we have a two-way integration with them. So for example, if you go in and book a facility in SmartRec, it then notifies Productive Parks and generates a work order to take care of the work that's required based on that particular booking. And then we're also working on some more, even more involved aspects of that, where let's say you have a class that meets every Tuesday and Thursday, and it'll create a series of work orders in Productive Parks to set up your bingo room with the proper tables and chairs and equipment that you'll need to run that program or whatever it might be. But then if you change one, then it would also notify, like, let's say one of the Thursday nights fell on Thanksgiving and you're not going to have that class running that night, it would notify the Productive Parks to remove that work order for that Thursday. So the two are talking back and forth to each other. And then there's also a piece that we're currently working on that has to do with cost recovery. And Amelia has a cost recovery module that they tie into their software. And that's where you look at a program and see, what are all the expenditures that we made to run this program? And then what are the revenues? And let's compare that. But the piece that's missing from that is, and also, what kind of load did that put on the maintenance people? And let's factor that in as well. And so then SmartRec would then be talking to Productive Parks, gathering our data to make their calculations within their software. So you can truly look at the cost of running any given program. And so we're really excited about that level of integration as well.
Oh, yeah, that's incredibly exciting. I feel like that automates so much of the process in a lot of different areas, right? So even just the facilities piece, when it comes to booking out different programs, and the fact that it automates all of that, so that the missing links, like the little details that fall through the cracks, like, oh, I forgot to ask for, you know, the tables and chairs to be set up. Like, is the whole idea kind of like taking the guesswork out of that and automating that process? Is that right?
Yes, that's exactly it. You know, and we would love, we have like an idea, this isn't in place yet, but that it would work bi-directional in that sense, that the person working in the rec software would actually be able to see the progress of that work order, that, oh, that was assigned to Bill to take care of on this date. And so they would know that, and they could rest easy that the maintenance department's on it and they've got it worked into their schedule. So that, you know, it's, yeah, to take that guesswork, and it just helped with the communication, because you've got this centralized repository of all of the data and information. And so, well, there's two of them, you know, one would be the rec software, the other would be Productive Parks, and make those two so that the important pieces of data know about each other and, talk back and forth to each other. So yeah, it's very exciting. And I will say that, Amelia has been extremely forward thinking about this, and they're really excited about it. And we see this, as do they, as the future of software, where each program is going to have its area, like its wheelhouse, its specialization. And then you just work on, it's called an API, application programming interface, to allow the two programs to talk back and forth to each other. And we really see this as the future, not just in Parks and Rec, everywhere across the world of software, but including within Parks and Rec.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like APIs are, like, those different connectors are becoming more and more common in different industries. And so it only makes sense for them to live in Parks and Rec. But But my experience is that oftentimes, because either, you know, lack of funding or lack of maybe support, it is difficult to get everybody on board with a new piece of technology. And like, especially for something so innovative, it's really exciting to see you guys working and moving towards this new direction that hopefully, once people see how all of those different things like automate and make your life easier, and you're actually saving money and you have data to prove it, then like, that's the type of excitement that I think people need to really make those decisions and kind of, you know, invest in a new type of future and new type of operation. So I'm really excited about that too.
Yeah, we are as well. We just love seeing that kind of stuff happen and working with people who have the similar point of view, you know, that we want to make this move forward. And so, yeah, very exciting.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if you're an agency or if you're, you know, at the decision table and you're thinking about the different things that are like in the future, if you're trying to make those decisions now about what does it look like for me to be raising the bar or for me to be kind of taking our agency to the next level, I think it has to evolve around technology. It has to evolve around like better communication with your staff. And so it makes a lot of sense for something like this to be on their radar. But let's kind of move into, it sounds like this might be like your favorite part of the software, but is there maybe like a lesser known feature that we can kind of highlight here on the show?
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. I would say that that's my favorite part, not only the integration with outside software, but the integration within the application itself. But I have kind of a favorite, almost like, you know, it's not hidden feature, but it's not a known feature and it's not a standard aspect of maintenance management systems. And that's what we call our task bucket. And what it is basically you can create tasks, you know, which are like essentially a work order that is this work that we need to have done. It needs to be done anytime within the next week, let's say, but it doesn't really matter who does it. Any of you folks in this department of maintenance can take this and it sits there and then the people are notified that they have a task that might be good for them to do. And if they happen to perhaps go to that location, they can say, oh, well, I'll take that task for myself. And then they can go and kind of adopt that task for themselves. That was the original reason for the software, for that piece of the software. But it's really interesting because people have taken that and used that in a whole variety of different ways. Like one agency in California, they have a Monday, Friday crew, then they have a weekend crew. And so they had tasks for the Monday, Friday crew, but if they didn't finish them, the tasks were kind of assigned to them, but they wanted the weekend staff to be able to take care of these things. And so they had to figure out a way to move the tasks from the Monday, Friday group to the weekend group. And it was difficult to figure it out, but with the task bucket, they can just leave it in the bucket. The weekend folks have access to that same bucket. So it just simplified the management. We have other larger agencies where somebody that's, you know, like a superintendent of maintenance wants something done. And so they'll just give it to maybe their parks, their director of their parks division. And then the parks division, they're not going to directly assign the work because they've got crew leaders underneath them. Then they will move it into a bucket for their crew leader. And then the crew leader can make the decision who to assign it to. So they also use it as a way to move, like desired work down their hierarchy. And again, that wasn't part of our design, but we see people coming up with these creative ideas how to use it. And that's another exciting thing for us is to watch our customers, you know, come up with all these creative ideas, which has been the driving force of the software since day one, is we listen to the customers and say, what do you need? What can we create for you to make your life simpler? I mean, we came from the world of Parks and Rec. My partner, Steve Dittimore, also ran an IT department in the Chicagoland area. So he's equally versed in how, you know, municipalities and Parks and Rec operations function. And so, but we ran IT departments, and that's a little different than taking care of either facility maintenance or parks maintenance. And so we weren't experts in that going into it. So we tapped on all the people that we knew that were experts, and it's just been super beneficial. And it also saves us from putting things into software that nobody cares about. And that helps us to keep the software simple and clean, which is one of the things, you know, that I mentioned that these other packages are so complex that you practically needed a systems analyst to help you manage it. We obviously wanted to avoid that. So we worked hard to keep software as clean and easy to use as possible. And so when we're not just throwing everything into it, because, well, maybe somebody might need this, we take the direct feedback. And until we see a need for it, then and only then do we put that into the software.
Yeah, I love that because there's too much software out there that like it does too much and it becomes overcomplicated. So let's do an example here. So let's say that I'm a facility coordinator and I'm at the park and I know that our playground needs maintenance, right? The swing is broken. So let's talk about what I do in that situation when it comes to using productive parks. Like, what does it look like from start to finish to make that maintenance request complete?
Okay, well, there's a couple of ways that that gets handled, and that is based on the protocol of whatever agency, because different agencies have different systems to set up to handle something like that. So I could see three different ways that that would come to pass. And one would be if this broken swing is noticed during an inspection, then that's noted on the inspection that there's a problem. There's a work order automatically generated because of that. And then that work order gets assigned out for somebody to complete. And that's how that cycle spins around. A second way is if the person who sees the problem is able to fix it themselves, then they just go ahead and make the repair right there on the spot. And then they go into productive parks and there's a way that they can log work that they do that was not assigned to them. So they would just go in and say, look, this is what I did. I saw this problem. I took care of it. It took me 45 minutes to do the work. And here's a picture of it, two pictures, one before and one after. Boom. And they would attach that to that. We call it a task, but it's like a work ticket. And that would be submitted back into the system. The third way would be if they weren't able to make that repair or wasn't within their domain of responsibilities to make that repair, they've got the ability to submit a work request. And so they would submit that and it would go back to the whoever is in charge of managing the maintenance of that playground. They would be notified of a problem. They would assign that work out to be taken care of. And then the cycle gets completed that way. So kind of three different ways, depending on how it happens and how the agencies, you know, in the demos, I always use the example of you see a problem that's for an electrician and that person is an electrician. So they have to submit a work request because it's not their thing. But the swing is something that's probably within just about everybody's ability to take care of. So they would take care of that. So then they would use the, it's called assigned task to myself, but it's just you saw something, you took care of it and you want to document that.
Okay, so is it an actual mobile app or is there a desktop version as well? How are most people using it?
Well, it works both ways. It works on all mobile devices. We haven't yet found any kind of internet capable mobile device that it doesn't work on. And then you can also access it on a desktop equally well, all different kinds of desktops, Windows, Macintosh, Linux, all of them. It works. So, people use it in all different ways. We have people that use Kindle Fire all the way up to the latest iPhones, you know, out in the field. And obviously in the office, it works on whatever desktop system you might have.
What about like security and compliance concerns? You know, I think especially parks and recreation departments or divisions, they may be within kind of a larger system. It like, how are you guys making sure that you're secure?
Our system is secure in and of itself because we're presenting the system live to the greater internet at large. We had to use all of the best practices to be able to secure that system so that you have to log in and it's constantly checking when you're logged in that you are currently logged in. So somebody couldn't very easily hack into the system and get into it in that way. Our data is outside of your system, so it puts no security risks to your system because we're not running internally to an agency's network. So we keep their system secure that way. And then we just, you know, follow all best practices for, they're called SaaS systems, software as a system is what the acronym stands for. And so there's people have developed best practices over the years, and we comply with all of those to make sure that our system is internally secure. And the other thing is we don't have a lot of secure data. We don't have any kind of personal information within the system. So we're not even a great target because there's not anything very exciting to steal. So hackers aren't going to be looking to chase after us, which is another kind of security by obscurity sort of thing. But we definitely...
Wait, so you mean hackers aren't interested in the status of a park bench?
Right. That's exactly right. Yeah. And how many hours, you know, Bill worked last week and those kinds of things are not of terrible interest to them. And we have no kind of financial information, no personal information like an HR system would have. And so we're just not a very shining target in that other sense. But nonetheless, we take all precautions to make sure that, because someone could, you know, if God forbid there were a hack, they can still wreck all kinds of havoc and agencies all across the country would, you know, the system would go down and there's that kind of problem as well. And that's more our concern, that they could get in and break something on purpose. And then that would mess up all of our customers.
Right, for sure. And I can see where this data can be really important when it comes to planning, right? Because like we always talk about, how do we make data driven decisions? Well, you have to have good data first. And can you maybe talk about how you can utilize this system for potentially long-term planning?
Yes. So long-term planning, we kind of view it in two ways. One would be like an annual maintenance plan to make sure that this year is everything that you want done in its appropriate time is getting taken care of. And so we have what we call scheduled maintenance series, which is like recurring maintenance. So you can block out your year. And even if it's only once during the year, you can look at it from that point and say, here are all the things that I've got scheduled out through the year that is part of my maintenance plan. And then going beyond a year into multiple years in the future, that kind of ties into the asset management aspect where you can put in longer term projections of things. And that tends to be more on the reporting side, because if you want to go in and put in and say, hey, we're going to recoat the roof on this building in 5 years, you can just go ahead and load that task into the system 5 years into the future. But I think that's more looking at the data and being able to pull up the information. How are all of my assets doing? How have they been performing? What do I have planned to replace in 2 years so that I know exactly how much money I have to set aside so I don't get hit with a maintenance deficit in that year when it arrives? I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to replace the roof of that building. And so it can be used in that way. And we have, you know, a couple of different reports designed to look out into the future and see your asset replacement plan, for example. And we've worked with Jamie Sabak from 110% Consulting in coming up with a plan where it actually also tells you how much money you should save each year to be able to be ready for in the future when these events come up according to the schedule, which you have the control to change and modify, then you'll be ready for them and prepared and you won't have those bad surprises.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It kind of moves you from being reactive into a proactive state. So you can kind of better predict what's likely to happen based on what's happened before. And then, you know, over time, I can just see that being really, really valuable. You know, it's the best time to start tracking your data was yesterday, but the second best time is today.
Right.
And so if you just get started right now, I can just really see how that would be a powerful planning tool. So that's awesome.
Yeah, it is. And then when you combine it with all the data that builds up over time, it just gets more powerful because you have more pertinent data to help you make your decisions.
Exactly. Okay. So when you think about the future of productive parks, you know, what are you guys planning for? Where are you moving into the future? Or is it just really fine tuning what you currently have?
Well, certainly we want to continue the fine tuning process. That's always a factor. And again, by studying the way people use it, we've come up with some ideas of how to make the software even easier to use from like the user interface component. So we're certainly working on that. The other piece is including or increasing the amount of integrations that we have with other applications or just deepening the integrations that we already have so that they're, you know, all the more exciting. But, you know, a lot of it is just that. And then other things is we're just constantly interviewing our customers and asking them for any thoughts and ideas, because a lot of things like that task bucket that I mentioned, that came from one of our users. They said, yeah, I need something. And I think they even came up with that term task bucket, and we liked it. And so we adopted it. But a lot of it is just seeing how people, you know, what can they think of that this could do to help them?
Yeah. All right. Perfect. Well, I think all of this is really, really interesting and a visionary concept for our field. And I'd love to end the interview today just by asking you what you think it means to raise the bar in the field.
Well, I would say that it means to set a new standard. So, you know, people accept things the way they are right now, but then they look and see somebody who has, quote unquote, raised the bar. Now the standard is at a higher level. They're doing more things. They're accomplishing more. Perhaps they're saving more money, or they're being more efficient, or they're creating a more staff-friendly work environment. And so that raises the bar to a new level. And that makes everyone else look at that and say, oh, wow, look what they're doing. And then they're going to want to do similar things. And so it's just kind of coming up with, and obviously to do that, it almost always involves doing something new or else a very creative reconfiguring of something they're already doing but it involves creativity in one sense or another to raise that standard. And then everybody else wants to bring themselves up to be able to equal that.
That's the hope when it comes to technology and Parks and Rec, is that there's a system like Productive Parks that for everything within Parks and Recreation, you know, this is kind of one core software that kind of covers maintenance and asset management. But I think if there is more of these types of tools that integrate with, you know, your communication throughout your department, your inventory, your tracking, like, it would just simplify so much that we could focus on, you know, back to what parks and recreation professionals are really good at, you know, which is being creative, which is coming up with, you know, new programs and new events and new, you know, facilities that are just going to enrich the community that we work in. So, Mike, I just want to thank you for coming on the show today and for creating such an awesome new product that I think definitely our listeners will love to hear about and hopefully learn more about. So if they'd like to learn more, where can they go?
Well, they can go to our website. Probably the most easy thing to do is productiveparks.com. And there, you know, we go through the different aspects of the software, and we have a video and we have contact forms. My email is mike@productiveparks.com. And they can also call us at 630-765-4252. And if they'd like to talk to me, I'm at extension 2. And we love talking to people. We've gotten great ideas just from people who call to talk about what is your software? What does it do? And we get into these long conversations, and some of the things in the software are actually based on that. So we love to talk with people in the field. It gives us great ideas.
That's awesome to hear. And hopefully this episode gave you kind of a glimpse of how things work and how you might imagine it working in your own agency. But I love that you're available for kind of those deeper conversations to see how it would specifically work for them. So that's awesome. You can go to productiveparks.com to learn more. And great. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. And until next time, let's talk parks. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Becky. It's been a pleasure.
Same.